This month, the U.S. House passed the Crown Act. It stands for Creating a Respectful and Open World for Natural Hair. Over a dozen states have passed similar legislation banning discrimination against people based on their hairstyles. Angela Onwuachi-Willig has long fought to end hairstyle policies at work and at school. She's dean of the Boston University School of Law. Dean, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to talk to you.
Well, thank you. It's nice to have you. Explain the history here of African Americans being discriminated against because of their hair.
Yeah, so there's a long history, of course, of people thinking that the texture and the structure of the hair that most African Americans have is inferior. There's been a long history of jokes about African American hair. And I think that has bled over both in terms of conscious and unconscious discrimination against people in the workplace. Usually these involve cases where somebody, where an employer has something that says no unprofessional hairstyles. And the reason why we can say that there's bias at play is that usually it's a supervisor or some employee who applies that broad prohibition in a way that is racially discriminatory.
So we're talking about real discrimination. Black Americans denied employment, housing, access to federally funded programs simply because of how they choose to wear their hair.
Absolutely. We're talking about real discrimination with real consequences, usually in the workplace, people being fired, people being not hired, people not being promoted, but it's usually not being hired or being fired because of the way they wear their hair.
You mentioned texture and structure of hair. Describe the kinds of hairstyles that will be protected under this new legislation should it become law.
Well, I think one really important thing to understand about the Crown Act is the Crown Act basically says that hair is, right, there's race is socially constructed, and one of the factors that gets used to define race is hair, right, hair texture. And if you look at old racial trials or, you know, you see that hair becomes one of the determining factors and often many cases. What the Crown Act says is that that kind of hair-based discrimination is race discrimination. I would even say it more broadly, that it's a race discrimination statute, but it makes it clear that hair-based discrimination is a form of race discrimination when the hairstyle is one that's commonly associated with African Americans.
Tightly coiled or curled locks, cornrows, twists, braids, bantu knots, afros, all of that.
All of that. All of that.
Here's Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley speaking about the impact of this kind of discrimination.
For too long, Black girls have been discriminated against and criminalized for the hair that grows on our heads and the way we move through and show up in this world. In my home state,
has this been particularly discriminatory for Black girls and Black women?
Absolutely. It's been particularly discriminatory for Black girls and Black women, in part because you see a lot of Black girls have either been suspended or kept from participating in certain activities, whether it's sports or other kinds of extracurricular activities, because of wearing braids or locks or twists. And African American women are actually traditionally been more likely to wear these hairstyles because of the length of our hair and the ways in which, you know, gender has been constructed so that longer hair is associated with girls, and more girls are likely to be wearing their hair in braids or locks or twists, which are longer hairstyles. One important distinction is that African-American hair, right, is usually when it's kept in its natural state, will grow up, right? My hair grows up, not down. It grows down now because I have my hair in locks. But if you're just wearing an afro, it grows up. And I think the norm or the ideal that has been in our society has been straight, fine hair that most white women have or most white people have that grows down.
But Black boys and other people of color have certainly suffered this discrimination as well.
Absolutely. Black boys have just suffered discrimination, you know, based on length of afros, based on wearing braids or wearing locks or twists. You know, white boys have also experienced a similar discrimination for wearing their hair longer. But it's really the negative associations that are attached to Black hairstyles or natural hairstyles, protective hairstyles, that has been at the root of this discrimination.
We remember the case in 2019 of the African-American wrestler in New Jersey, who was ordered by a white referee to cut his dreadlocks before a match or forfeit the game. Give us other examples that we may not know of.
There are just a ton of cases. I mean, there's the most famous case is a case from Rogers versus American Airlines, where American Airlines many, many years ago had an explicit prohibition against wearing one's hair in braided hairstyles. And Renee Rogers wore her hair in a cornrow hairstyle. And one of the most interesting things about that case is, of course, the judge in that case, completely unaware of any different texture or structure of African-American hair, really writes a number of things in that opinion that exhibits that. But one of them is he says that she was wearing her hair in cornrows because of Bo Derek had worn her hair in the movie Ten and had made it popular. Well, of course, African-American women had been wearing their hair in cornrow for decades before Bo Derek ever was starred in the movie Ten.
You've long been an advocate for ending hairstyle policies in the workplace. Have you experienced this kind of discrimination in the workplace yourself?
Yes. I mean, I've experienced that discrimination explicitly in the workplace where someone made a comment about my hair. Luckily, somebody who was there and heard it reported it, and that person received a reprimand. I've also experienced it indirectly, right? So I've experienced it indirectly in my daughter asking to have her hair straightened. I've seen lots of friends experience explicit discrimination. I had a friend, in fact, who wore their hair in locks and then couldn't get a job, was a lawyer, was qualified, and then all of a sudden cut their hair and then went in, and all of a sudden they were able to find a job once they changed their hairstyle. So I think they're both implicit and explicit demands on many African Americans to change their hair to make it look more like the straight, generally fine hair that many white people have. And I think it's problematic because we wouldn't ask someone to change their skin color. We wouldn't ask somebody to get rhinoplasty if we thought their nose was too broad. And so why do we feel so comfortable asking people to change the texture and structure of their hair?
We watched a situation related to hair at the Oscars when, of course, Will Smith slapped comedian Chris Rock after Rock made a joke about Smith's wife's hair, or her buzzed hair. Jada Pinkett Smith, of course, has alopecia, a condition that can lead to hair loss. What did you make of all that, Dean?
Obviously, the joke was a joke, to my mind, that went too far, and that it made light of a condition that Jada Pinkett had and that she couldn't help. And I think it's interesting, a lot of people have been replaying a clip from a movie that Chris Rock did where he's really sort of exploring, you know, the explicit and implicit demands on African-American women to wear their hair in a particular way, which explores some of the costs, right, in terms of burns on one's scalp, or the costs in terms of money for weaves and other things of that nature to try to maintain this white beauty norm of straight, fine hair.
Just yesterday, my daughter came into the house and said, "Daddy, how come I don't have good hair?" I wonder how she came up with that idea.
Within the Black community, if you have good hair, you're prettier or better than. The lighter, the brighter, the better.
They want to go like this, like Farrah Fawcett.
There's so many pressures to straighten your hair.
Look at my ring, still there.
And in one of the clips, he's talking to a woman who clearly has alopecia, and she's talking about why it was so hard for her trying to always throughout her life meet the standard, and in particular as an African-American woman, meet this impossible standard of having this idealized hair that most white women have that many Black women don't have.
So I think the reason hair is so important is because our self-esteem is wrapped up in it. It's like a type of currency for us, even though those standards are completely unrealistic and unattainable, especially for Black women.
And so it's interesting to see that clip and then see him make fun of Jada Pinkett in front of everybody at the Oscars. And so it was a stunning event for a variety of reasons, stunning because of the joke, but also stunning because of Will Smith slapping him on stage, which I don't condone at all. It was very interesting, but it does tell you again the harms of, you know, the standards that many women are having to live up to, because you could see it clearly in Jada Pinkett's face that she didn't find it funny when he told the joke, even as Will Smith initially smiled when he heard the joke.
Angela Owachi-Willig is Dean of Boston University's School of Law. Dean, thank you very much.
Thank you.